We gather to seek, to find, and to share the promise of honest religion. And so it is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. Vulnerability more powerful than strength. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. Each of us comes here as an individual. We bring the truth of our own life, our own story. We don't come as empty vessels, but as full people, people who have a story, a truth, and a wealth of experience. All manner of people are here, needy, joyful, frightened, anxious, bored, happy. We bring them all together here. May we recognize and honor the truth and the story in everyone's life. Together, we are a community as we enter the silence. Amen. I've heard it said that the shortest distance between truth and a human being is a story. Collections like Aesop's Fables, Canterbury Tales, Selected Shorts, Friedman's Fables, and parables from all of the world's religions are some of the ways wisdom is passed down from generation to generation. Families are full of stories that reflect the small and large events of daily life. When I tell you a story, it is filtered by my own perspective, my feelings about the experience, and my truth as I understand it. Sometimes my story may resonate with you, and part of it may seem very different from your experience. And if you respond, perhaps you will reflect on your own life, or perhaps you will tell me your story. And that's one way that we verify the truth of what we know, or challenge one another to consider a different perspective. When people die, we begin telling stories that summarize them as individuals, unique in this world. We tell actual tales from their lives, share dreams about their unlived future, and help develop a more complete picture of that person. I noticed this practice years ago when my brother died in 1985. Immediately, my parents and siblings and cousins started telling stories about our relationship with him. Stories about his life adventures. Stories about the funny or tragic things he did. And as we burst into laughter, we wondered if other people in the funeral home might wonder what was going on. But our laughter was cathartic as we shared memories long after the funeral was over. It is very hard to lose a brother or any family member or loved one because part of your own history now exists only in your memory. Death generates life in the stories that say what a person meant to us and what we learned by interacting with him or her. When the individual stories are blended and refined, they become universalized, and eventually they morph into wisdom tales for all time. You may not recognize the particular characters, but you may see something of the truth, because stories have multiple layers of meaning from which we take what we need and what we are ready to hear at that time. If people don't understand, perhaps it doesn't match their experience. But over time, the dormant seed left by the telling may suddenly sprout in an aha moment. Stories you hear can also be about you, not just the people in them. And once a story is told, it becomes part of you. Instead of thinking, oh, I know someone else like that, you might try putting yourself in that person's shoes. The words are intended to generate mental images, to stir your own imaginations, make use of symbols, and linger in some fashion long after the mere words have vanished into thin air. You listen to stories the way you listen to the wind and the trees and the sound of the river or the song of the bird. Perhaps they awaken something within our hearts that is beyond all knowledge. Perhaps they will open doorways to our souls. It is said that fences make good neighbors, but perhaps that is not always the case. Because once upon a time, on this side of town, there were four neighbors who lived with their backyards facing each other. They lived together in peace and harmony and liked to get together to play, to sing, got out their guitars, and they'd have a barbecue in the backyard. And they enjoyed this so much that one of the neighbors installed a permanent barbecue grill in her backyard. And the people loved to eat hamburgers, and of course they would fix them to their own liking, maybe with some steak sauce or lettuce or plain ketchup or nothing at all. And they could eat their hamburgers any way they wanted. But after many years of this, the neighbor had to move away. And so they were very sad. They had one final barbecue before she left, and they were wondering who might move in after her. A few days later, a neighbor did move in. And you know how neighbors are. You just watch to see what kind of furniture comes in. You know, are there bicycles? Will there be kids? And they were delighted when they saw her go out to the barbecue grill one evening and begin to heat up some coals. It looked like she was going to fit right into the neighborhood, but what in the world was on that grill? It was nothing like a hamburger. It was something soft and flabby, and it smelled really weird. They said, ooh, and they ran into their houses and locked the doors. Well, the neighbor came around to their doors and knocked, tried to invite everyone to dinner, but they pretended they were not at home. And they called each other up and said, oh, what are we going to do about this? We can't stand all that smelly stuff. So they decided to build fences. And they built them so tall that they were hoping that no smell would come across to their side of the fence. And they just didn't really care to get to know that new neighbor. They were the size of skyscrapers. And, of course, the other neighbors didn't much like that. I mean, these tall, ugly fences. And after several years, it was really hard to maintain those fences because, you know, getting up there, you have to build a scaffolding to paint the darn things. And so they didn't really take very good care of these fences, and they began to deteriorate. And finally, they just collapsed out of their own weight. And they all ran out of their houses and thought, oh, dear, we hope that neighbor isn't hurt. Well, she wasn't hurt. She was gone. She had moved away, and they didn't even know it. And they hadn't seen her since the day she moved in, and she might have moved out years ago. And they realized that maybe they got what they wanted, but maybe they had made a big mistake. And that's the story of Spite Fences by Paul Beckel. And there's another story about old Joe and a carpenter. Old Joe was the guy who lived out in the country all by himself after his wife died. And he had a neighbor across the way, his closest friend, whose wife had died. And the guys had grown old together. Their kids were gone. But they had a disagreement. It was the first time in years that they had fought about anything. It seemed like a calf had wandered from one side of the property to the other. And Job knew it was his calf, but his neighbor claimed him. Said, "It's on my side. It's my calf now." And Job said, "But it's my calf. It looks just like its mama. See the markings on the forehead?" So they got really irritated with one another, and they stomped off in their houses and slammed the doors, didn't talk to each other for 2 weeks. Well, one Saturday morning, there was a knock at Joe's door. He wasn't expecting anybody, and he was quite surprised when he saw a young man there with a toolkit. He said, "Sir, I'm a carpenter. I'm looking for work, and I'm good with my hands. So if you have a project for me, I'd be glad to help you out." And old Joe said, "Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. Do you see that neighbor's house over there? And you see that creek running along our property line? Well, that creek was not there just last week. That old codger hitched a plow to his tractor and dug a big old creek and flooded it and separated us. So now what I want you to do is to build me a fence. I've got all the supplies you need out in the garage." So the carpenter smiled and said, "Okay, I'll do a good job for you." And he started on his project while Joe went to town to get some groceries. But when he came back, he was quite surprised by what he saw. It was not a fence at all, but it was a beautiful footbridge, handrails and all, that reached from one side of the creek to the other. And about that time, old Joe's neighbor came across that footbridge and held out his hand and said, "I want us to be friends. That was such a silly argument. The calf is yours." And Joe said, "Oh, you can keep the calf. I'd rather us be friends, too. The bridge was this young fellow's idea, and I'm glad he did it." The carpenter hoisted his toolbox up on his shoulder and started to go down the road. And Joe said, "Wait, you're a good man. We've got lots of projects to keep you busy around here." And the carpenter smiled and said, "Well, I'd like to stay, but I can't. I have more bridges to build." And he walked on down the road, whistling a happy tune as he went. And that's the story of old Joe and the carpenter. I can bet that all of us have built fences at one time or another. I wonder what our fences are made of and when were they built. Fences can make good neighbors when they protect our privacy, but not if they isolate us from our neighbors. Do they still serve their original purpose? Is there a way to change the architecture? Maybe add a window or a door. When have you built bridges instead of fences? Our closest relationships probably contain both fences and bridges that can change over time. This morning, you witnessed a senior bridging ceremony. A ritual meant to recognize that as our young people grow older, they continue to need a strong connection with Unitarian Universalism. Don't let these young people disappear like the neighbor in the story without even getting to know them as adults. Add them to your mailing list. Send them notes or care packages or electronic greetings from time to time. Throw a party for all the young adults during the winter break. Some of them will be home from college. Others will have stayed in Austin. And all of them will have stories to share. They can learn from your stories, and you can learn from theirs. Oprah Winfrey said in 1987, "I am where I am because of the bridges I have crossed." Sojourner Truth was a bridge. Harriet Tubman was a bridge. Ida B. Wells was a bridge. Madame C.J. Walker was a bridge. Fannie Lou Hamer was a bridge. Stories, as well as people, can form bridges that connect the past with the present as we gather on the front porch, around the neighborhood, at the dinner table, or even in a sermon. I invite you during the social hour to share your stories about how some kind of bridge helped you get to where you are now, and what kind of bridges you can build as a congregation to help folks of all ages get to where they're going. May it be so. Amen. We leave this sacred time together. Our world needs us and the spirit we carry forth.
Let us become the light, the truth, and the healing which has to be.
Amen.